This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Lee Chui Lin, along with Kelvin Yee. This is the evening edition, and for our last story of the day, this happened a little earlier in the week, but it did kind of pull up some interesting questions that we wanted to address. PAS is calling on the Pakatan Harapan administration not to ratify other United Nations treaties, and this comes, of course, days after the government said that they will not be ratifying ICERD.
So PAS Information Chief Nasruddin Hassan said these other treaties are a huge risk and threaten the nation. The rest that Malaysia has yet to sign on to involves conventions against torture, prevention of enforced disappearances, and protection of migrant workers. Putrajaya had previously promised to ratify 6 international human rights treaties, including the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman and Degrading Treatment or Punishment, and the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families.
So PAS said that they want the government to declare its stand on the other treaties and whether or not they would be ratified. That, however, is not exactly the topic that we want to address. It's not necessarily that. Instead, looking at the story, my first reaction to it was, I kind of didn't fully understand the position. I have to say that. I didn't understand how, protecting civil and political rights, preventing torture, preventing cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment, why that is or would be perceived as a threat towards the nation. And yet every time we do a show about human rights, we will get kind of these pockets of feedback, right, where people say, well, why do we have to ratify or why do we have to accede to this? And I find that an interesting reaction.
It's also troubling to me that the mindset here is that, oh, you give some people more rights, then automatically I lose some rights. But that's not always the case. And I don't know why some other people might think about it this way. I wonder what it is about them or their philosophy or their principles that gives them this point of view on the world and why they feel like they lose out each time someone else is given more.
I think it comes from a place of insecurity and a sense of scarcity that is maybe a bit misplaced. I mean, rights are not like oil. They don't run out. You know, you don't finish mining it and then you have to go look for more rights elsewhere. Where are the rights? You know, it's like you give people rights. And giving one person more rights than they have had in the past doesn't take away from what you have. But the fact that this is kind of a pressure point in our country, I think it says something about, a mindset of scarcity that I don't think is accurate.
And you know, with these conventions, they also seem to protect those who are most vulnerable. And don't we all have a responsibility to take care of those who are weakest and who don't perhaps have the most access to their rights or whatever privileges that they might need, right?
And even if you don't feel that sense of responsibility, I don't think it has to be seen as a taking away of something from you for other people to assume that responsibility by ratifying these rights, by being able to afford some protection. It doesn't take away the protections that you already have. I mean, it's just one of those things. So we wanted to kind of break down that mindset to understand that psychology a little better. And with that in mind, let's head over to the lines where we have clinical psychologist Vizla Kumaresan. Vizla, thanks for joining us. So talk to us about this. Why does it seem like fundamental human rights continue to not be considered absolute or universal?
Okay, so the whole concept of human rights is based on the notion that it is universal and is derived from the fact that no matter where we are in the world, no matter what our skin color, our religion, our personal beliefs, anything, we are all fundamentally human beings. And as human beings, we have a set of rights. And it's all the same, no matter where you are in the world, no matter who you are, we all have the same rights. So that is the fundamental principle of human rights. However, where we see contention is where people bring in this idea of cultural relativism, this notion that because of our cultures, we are different. And this is where you see the tensions arising between people who are saying that it's not universal and people who are saying that these things are all universal. So I think that's where the main difference is.
What is the psychology behind people who might not want to grant basic rights to certain groups of people? You know, in this case, we talk about migrants and even refugees, for example.
So if you look at human rights from a universal perspective, it's viewing everybody as the same. There is no us and them, right? There's only we. And for a lot of people who are approaching it from a very cultural relativistic perspective, there is an us and them perspective. And, you know, anthropologists and sociologists call it othering. And there are many reasons why people do this. And one of the main ideas behind this is this notion that people are afraid of something that isn't familiar to them. So when we start separating us and them, it's because we are afraid of the other. We become anxious about what the other is, and we concentrate more on our differences rather than our similarities.
So what is that fear or anxiety of the other about? What is the risk of opening up to people who might be very much, you know, outside your culture?
Well, the main thing is it challenges your view on things. It challenges perspectives on life. It challenges your idea of what life is, what everything is about. And people use different reasons to justify why we're different. People use, you know, there is the security factor, you know, that they are going to come and murder us in our sleep or destroy our way of life. Then there is the disease factor. People are going to bring in diseases. And we see this very clearly now with the issue of the migrant caravan in America, where this similar rhetoric is being used to justify why these migrants will not be allowed to enter the United States. And it's basically the same thing. You're afraid of what this other group will do to your group. And if you accept them, you'd have to introduce a whole, everything changes. And change is something that is very frightening for some people. It destabilizes. And it's not just one change. It becomes a series of changes, and people become uncomfortable with that notion.
One admittedly extreme argument made against equal rights is that it's a gateway to vice. It just opens up society to things like gambling and drinking, and it would, I guess, eventually wipe out the identity of certain groups. Can you help us make sense of this logic?
Yeah, so this is one of the, you know, sort of the fallacies in this kind of argument. Rights doesn't mean you allow criminal activity. So this is why you've got to balance rights and responsibilities. And this is why things like legislation is, you know, important, enforcement of that legislation. Now, rights doesn't mean that people are allowed to do whatever they want to do. Of course, you know, simple rules of not hurting each other, another person, will still apply. And the adage used for rights is that one person's rights end where the other person's nose begins. So rights doesn't mean you get to impose or impinge on other people, or standards of crime are going to change, or the definitions of crime is going to change. It just means accepting that with these universal values, there is going to be a lot of diversity in people and opinions and thoughts and beliefs. And there is value in that kind of diversity.
So how can we shift that worldview, you know, one that might hold that that fear of the other as well as that resistance to change? How can we shift that to one that perhaps understands and appreciates the importance of basic human rights, along with the steps that will be needed to achieve that?
I think the main thing that's driving these things in opposition to this is fear. And if we address these fears, if we allow people to feel that other people are not that much different from us, there's nothing for us to be afraid of. They're not bad, they're not evil, they're different, and that's okay. That would be the primary basis in which we can help shift the dialogue. And that also means the way our leaders speak about others. Our leaders speak about us Malaysians ourselves, do not cause divisions amongst us. The moment you start addressing the differences between us, it also extends to acknowledging the universality of everybody and all peoples.
And I suppose an important point in the fight for human rights is that there's by no means a desire for someone to give up their culture. You know, nobody's really asking you to forfeit your cultural or religious rights.
Absolutely, yes. And that is the argument that sometimes gets lost. And that is the point that needs to be reiterated.
Vizla, thank you so much for chiming in. That was clinical psychologist Vizla Kumaresan helping us understand the reasons why equal human rights continues to be something of a point of contention in Malaysia, kind of helping us delve, I suppose, into the mindset that informs that worldview.
And something that's, I think, very important to understand, as we've seen with how much anxiety and how much of the fears that came up when, you know, the government said that they were going to ratify the ICERD.
Let us know what you think. Why are some people, or why? What is that mindset that causes that resistance, you know, to wanting to ratify or wanting to move towards universal human rights here in Malaysia? What's preventing us from getting there? Give us your perspective. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more music heading towards the 8 o'clock news. This is the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.